Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta. The Residents are a renegade sound and video collective that's been making their own rules for 50 years. They always perform in disguise, and no one knows who they are. If anyone should know the true identities of the band, it's Don Hardy. He's the director of Theory of Obscurity, a film about the Residents. So I asked Don this very question. Who are the Residents?
I'll never tell.
Give us a hint. Can you give us a few hints?
Well, the Residents are a music and art collective started in San Francisco back in the early 70s, and they've remained anonymous all these years, so I can't divulge it right now.
Okay, so why did you want to make a documentary about the Residents?
Well, I've lived in the Bay Area for a number of years now, and it's really become home to me. And one of the things I like so much about being out here is there's a lot of mysteries. And one night over drinks with a couple of friends, we started talking about the Residents. And honestly, it was a band I didn't know much about. But hearing my friends Josh Keppel and Bart Bischoff talk about them, and Josh had known them a little bit. He helped shoot a concert DVD for them. And Bart had been a lifelong fan, and just hearing how they talked about the band, it just seemed very interesting and very much about the Bay Area as a whole, especially the art scene back in that early 70s time period. So it just seemed like a very interesting subject to try to tackle, to try to tell a story about a band where you can't interview the band.
And you, as you mentioned, you weren't really a fan of the band before you started making the film. Did you become one as you were making the film?
Yeah, absolutely. There's some albums I like more than others, but I really appreciate what the Residents stand for, which is this idea of creating art without celebrity.
That's so rare
in our world today. And it's something that is a core belief that they have, is that the work should stand for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you should do what you really want to do, what drives you, and not necessarily what the fans want.
This is a band that has managed to remain anonymous since they started in 1974. So I'm guessing that one of the biggest challenges you faced in making your film was, how do you make an authoritative documentary about this group? Was that something you thought a lot about before filming?
Probably I didn't think about it enough, or I wouldn't have gone down that road. It had to do with their 40th anniversary. That really drove the idea for making the film, that, hey, they're going out to do this 40th anniversary tour, and it's the first time in their long history that they've really been in a reflective place where they're talking about all of the different ups and downs of their career. So it was a perfect time to try to document them.
Mm-hmm.
So we jumped in just shooting the shows, and we went all over the country, including through Milwaukee with them, shot at the very cool Turner Hall. That was an experience. That was our way in. So we got to know the people that surround the band at that point, and then started figuring out how we were going to construct the storyline.
Mm.
What interviews we needed to get that with different people that could illuminate certain periods of the Residents' history. You know, people that had collaborated with them or artists that they had influenced. And that shaped the film.
One thing I wanted to run by you, I recently read Ian Shirley's book about the Residents that came out a few years ago, and I really enjoyed it, but I have to confess that I haven't enjoyed listening to the Residents' music nearly as much as I've enjoyed reading about the music and the band. I wish I liked the music more, and maybe I just haven't listened to it enough. You have that great clip from Les Claypool of the band Primus.
It's like a fungus. It just kind of takes over, and then you kind of get used to the fungus, and then you learn to appreciate the fungus. So the Residents was a big part of my musical fungus.
Is that kind of how it worked for you? Was there sort of a fungal quality about getting into their music?
Yeah, it's very fungal. That's a good way to put it. But I think to look at the Residents as a whole, it isn't just about the music. It's about the art that goes along with it. And you don't have to like it all. In fact, I don't think anybody could sit here and say, well, maybe there's a couple of super fans. They would say they love everything they've ever done. But it is very varied.
Mm-hmm.
And
some
earlier albums, like I would say Fingerprints and Duckstab, and, you know, maybe those are two of the more accessible ones. And then there's an album like Eskimo that's very tough.
So when you were putting this film together, were you thinking about trying to find the most accessible samples of their music to put into the film? Was that something that you thought about a lot?
No, I can't say I really thought about that. But what drove me was to try to not just tell the rock documentary. I find music docs as a whole to be very boring. What interested me the most about the Residents is that they just played by their own rules. And you could go anywhere with it. The best compliment I received since the film has been out is from a 12-year-old girl that got dragged to see it from by her father, who had like collaborated on an art project with the Residents 20 years ago. And she came up to me after the screening and said, I thought that the Residents were just some dumb thing my dad was into, but now after watching this, it makes me want to go out and make art.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
And so if more people can take that away from it, that you don't have to necessarily like them, mm-hmm. but like what they stand for, and like that they didn't contemplate the what-ifs of could they be successful musicians. They just said, in fact, they didn't even know how to play their instruments.
Yeah.
But it made them create something else.
Yeah. There's that great quote from Penn Jillette of Penn & Teller, who actually worked with the Residents early on, but he has that great quote just along what you were saying about...
No matter what you think of the first record, they finished it. No matter what you think of the second record, they finished it. No matter what you think of the Mole Show tour, they did it. No matter what you think of Violinist Fats, okay, they didn't finish that. But, you know, the idea is they learned to run the video equipment. That's a lesson in life. That's a lesson for not how you're the greatest avant-garde band of all time, but it's also how you start a dry cleaning business. It's also how you do road repair. If you wait until you understand enough to do something, you're never going to get it done.
Yeah, so they are very inspiring in that way, yeah. The title of your film is Theory of Obscurity, and this is a real theory that exists in the history of the Residents. Can you tell me about this theory?
Yeah, it was an idea that came up from this possibly real character named Ensenada.
He's the one that, as I understand it, is credited with the theory of obscurity. And the theory of obscurity is that artists do their best work in obscurity, and they do their best work when they're free from the scrutiny of fans, press, criticism. If they're obscure, they're free to do whatever purely comes out of them.
It's just like you can do whatever you want when you're free of that. So if you're living in obscurity, then you can do whatever you want to do.
The Residents, of course, as you mentioned earlier, they're famous for their eyeball heads and top hats. How did they come up with this visual trademark?
It came about when they were putting together the key art for their album Eskimo, that I believe came out in 81, 82. And they were looking for an image and this idea of some kind of orb that would go over their heads. And initially, it was going to be a mirror. And at some point, they realized that that wouldn't really work. So the mirror changed into, like, a mirror pointed out at the audience, which is a pretty neat idea.
Oh, yeah.
But then it morphed into an eyeball. And there's a lot of stuff, I believe we show in the film, a Ralph Waldo Emerson drawing and quote from way back that has a giant eyeball with a small top hat on it. So
yeah.
I think that really was their inspiration.
Yeah.
But it's one of those stories that's kind of up for debate. With the Residents, the truth is lost somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And even when you talk with the different members of the Cryptic Corporation, their management company, you get a different story.
Yeah, tell them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just trying to make the best out of where it really came from. But somewhere in there went from a mirror to an eyeball to the back image, the back album image for Eskimo, to realizing, wow, this is a very strong image. We might as well put it on the front of the album.
Yeah, and someone, really, as someone says in your documentary, I think it's a member, someone from the Cryptic Corporation says,
if you look back at the summation of their career, what's their biggest hit? It's a t-shirt. They have a hit t-shirt. But, I mean, you know, there's something that's real pop culture about them.
And because they're anonymous, there have been all kinds of rumors about who the Residents really are, right? Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, that was something we really wanted to play with early on, is this idea that anybody could be a Resident. And so there's talk that the Beatles were actually Residents in disguise.
Yeah, yeah.
David Byrne has long been suspected to be a Resident.
Yeah, Bob Seger too.
Bob Seger, absolutely. Yeah. Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, yeah. So the residence management team is called the Cryptic Corporation. Can you tell me about them? Because it's a very interesting arrangement, the way they have them. And it's part of the whole thing of them being this more of an art music collective rather than a band.
Yeah, well, these same guys that moved out from Louisiana formed this corporation basically to manage the residents. The residents are free to just go out and make whatever art they want to make and record, and they needed somebody to handle all of their business affairs. That became the Cryptic Corporation. And so they've managed them, and only them, for almost 50 years now.
Wow.
And along the way, they formed their own record label, Ralph Records, and distributed other artists' work, but their primary artist has always been the residents. Mm.
Back when MTV first hit the airwaves in the, when was that, mid-80s, 86, whenever, they actually played music videos, viewers could often see music videos by the residents on MTV.
Yeah.
And one of them was for a song called Hello Skinny. Can you tell me a bit about this music video?
Yeah, when MTV first started, they had very little content to actually put on there, so the residents became one of the bands in high rotation, which is so bizarre knowing how MTV changed over the decades.
Yeah.
So they had this clip laying around for a video for a song called Hello Skinny that is very strange. It's a clip directed by Graham Whiffler, who is an early collaborator with the residents.
I'd never seen a music video, but it kind of made sense. Well, we'll do a short film to just a song.
Skinny was born in a bathtub and grew so incredibly thin that even the end of an eyedropper sucked him in.
Did some other videos for folks like Snakefinger, and Ronaldo in the Loaf was another one that he went on to direct some movies and TV. But Graham did this clip for Hello Skinny, and it stars just one strange figure and follows his travels through a night in, I guess, San Francisco. And ultimately, they use a lot of still photos in there and do some movement on the still photos. But it's a very creepy clip. And while we were digging through all of the archives to make the film, we unearthed all this footage that was like outtakes from Hello Skinny, and have used those to, we kind of did new masters of all of those old videos, was one of the things we did while making the movie.
The residents have always been early adopters of technology. They've made Laserdiscs, CD-ROMs, and they even did this podcast experiment a few years ago. How important do you think the band's embrace of technology has been to their longevity and the fact that they're still going?
Well, I think it's huge because they have really jumped onto new technology. And it just shows where their interest really lies. And if they could have played their instruments better, they wouldn't have experimented so much. But they wanted to be able to take things and loop them and sample them and move them around and play with them by duplicating them and smashing it all together. That was always an interest for them that really put them ahead of the curve. And I think they still are doing that curiosity with technology. But it also has been to their detriment in a way that a lot of this technology doesn't last. Mm. So you mentioned like Laserdisc. Okay, well, good luck with that. Or CD-ROMs.
Yeah, yeah. Their fans include Matt Groening, who of course is the creator of The Simpsons, and Penn Jillette of Penn & Teller, and Penn actually worked with the residents. What did those guys tell you about why they love the residents?
It's that freedom that we've talked about a bit. And so for Matt, it was something that in his early years, when he was first in L.A., he just found the residents and knew it was something different. And it did inspire him in a lot of ways to just start creating.
So who are the residents fans? Is there a typical residents fan?
We kind of laugh and joke that it's, you know, when the residents go on tour, it's the first chance a lot of people get to come out of their parents' basement. But it's not that. It's really not the case. Like, there are a lot of guys that, you know, definitely the comic book crowd is certainly part of it. But what we've been seeing lately is that a lot of people are bringing their kids. It's a multi-generational thing now for residents fans. And you see a lot of people, you know, I think because the film has been out there a bit, I think it has attracted new viewers to the residents as well.
So near the end of your film, we see the residents' entire archive be installed and displayed, put on permanent exhibition, right, at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City?
Yeah, it's part of the permanent collection. It isn't always on exhibition,
yeah,
but they're waiting for the next, you know, maybe they'll create a show about, like, post-punk. That seems to be where the residents get placed a lot, is like the post-punk, no-wave kind of area. So the next time that will be there, their archive will be on display, and, you know, because the residents never do anything the easy way, what we delivered to the MoMA that you can see in the film is one of their ultimate box sets, and it's every official recording they ever did, along with one of the original eyeballs, delivered in a refrigerator. That
yeah.
is the ultimate box.
Right, which is why then we see the entire archive is housed in a refrigerator at the Museum of Modern Art.
Yeah.
What do you want people to take away from watching Theory of Obscurity, a film about the residents?
Well, I guess the idea that you don't have to follow what everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. If there's something that really motivates you, go do it. Don't. And I certainly find this in my film work, as if I had ever known how hard it was going to be to not only make a film but then get it out into the world, I probably wouldn't have gone down this path. I would have stayed in my role as a journalist and collected my paycheck every couple of weeks, and that would have been a simpler route. But I took the journey, and you know, I'm happy to say that it's worked out so far. I think that would be my biggest takeaway from it for other people, is if there's something that drives you, just do it.
Don Hardy is the director of Theory of Obscurity, a film about the residents. You can find out more about Don and the residents' story at wpr.org/beta.
In order to make it small enough to be the kind of portable device that they wanted it to be, they had to remove the recording function. So that just seemed preposterous to them at the time.
We rewind to a time before iPods. Rebecca Tuhus DeBrow joins us to talk about the history of the Walkman. That's next. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.